Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Creative Processing Podcast. My name is Joe Gordon-Levitt. The idea of this show is to have a conversation about the creative process, inspired by one question. That question comes from you out there asking questions on the internet. And then I find a guest that I think is well-suited to answer that question, and we have a conversation. My guest this week is Omid Memar. He is a fantastic young actor. I recently worked with him on a movie called 7500, which is not out yet. This is a movie I'm really proud of, and the acting was very, very challenging. I dare say it was as challenging as any acting I've ever done, and he's so good in the movie. Omid is just, every moment is so honest and real and heartbreaking and human. He's a young guy. He's just really getting started in his career. He was 18 when I worked with him, and I think that made him particularly well-suited to answer this question. The question came from Megan Culbert from Springfield, New York, and she asked, how do you balance the inner need to create with the practical need to bring in a paycheck? This is a big question, and I have to admit, I'm coming from a lucky and a privileged position to talk about it. I've been fortunate to make money as an actor since I was 6 years old, and I'm sitting in the rare and fortunate position right now of having enough money to be comfortable in my life. So I have a particular perspective on where making money intertwines with making art or being creative. I do think, though, that there's oftentimes in our culture, too much emphasis put onto whether or not one makes money doing the thing that they love to do. There's almost like a condescending attitude in like Western capitalist culture about if you do something and it's not the thing that you do for a living, then you must not be as good at it, or you must not take it seriously, or it must not be as important as if you do it professionally. And honestly, I think that's really a problematic way to think about it. You know, I know plenty of people who make a lot of money, or I should say I know of plenty of people who make a lot of money doing various creative things in the movie business or whatever, who it's not something that they love. It's not something that they're getting the kind of fulfillment out of that I think is really the valuable part of being creative, of doing art. And I also know plenty of people who do their thing. They draw, or they make music, or they write, or they're doing their creative thing, and it's not their career, and they don't make money doing it, but it's a deeply meaningful thing, and they get a lot out of it. And I sort of feel like one of the things I would like to accomplish with my fortunate platform to be able to like have a podcast and have you guys listening to what I have to say, or the work that I do with my company Hit Record, et cetera, like one of the things that I'd like to put forward, one of the ideas is, hey, even if you're not making money, that doesn't mean that you're not a real artist. And that's not to say that you shouldn't pursue the money, and that's not to say that having money involved is bad or in any way contaminating, but it's just not all there is. It's not all there is. You know, the truth is that oftentimes if you're going to make it your career, you'll run into circumstances where your creativity has to take a back seat to your career. And I've definitely found myself in situations where I'm like, well, this is part of being an actor. I'm having to do this today, but man, I don't like it. I feel, not only do I not feel creatively inspired, I feel like this is deadening my creative spirit. I've definitely had plenty of days like that. And I don't know, I've definitely had moments where I've wondered, maybe I shouldn't be doing this professionally. Maybe I would get more out of this if it weren't how I earn my living. If I were just doing my own creative thing and didn't have to worry about what impact it might or might not have on my career, on my livelihood. I could see real upsides to that. But it's something that I think I probably talk about less on this podcast, because I like to put more emphasis on the creative process itself and less emphasis on career building. But the honest truth is that in many ways they are inextricably linked, and it's, you know, it makes perfect sense that I think a lot of people are curious about that. And so this is an episode where we get into talking about that, and I'm talking about it with Omid, who is figuring this out for himself right now. So why don't I take you to this conversation? I think you'll like it. Ladies and gentlemen, Omid Mimar. Okay, Omid, thanks for doing this.
You're welcome.
So like I told you, each episode of this show starts with a question. Mm-hmm. And I think you'll be good to answer this question, good to spawn a conversation around it. The question comes from someone named Megan Colbert. She lives in Springfield, New York. And her question is, how do you balance the inner need to create with the practical need to bring in a paycheck? So I thought this would be interesting to talk to you about, because you're a young guy just getting started on a career, and this has got to be something that's on your mind as far as balancing creativity versus financial security. Do you mind talking about that?
Yeah, of course. Why not? I'm just thinking, I already had this conversation today with Passer.
Oh, really?
You know Passer.
Yeah, of course. Who's another actor in 7500.
And I had also this conversation with Patrick Follerod.
Today?
No, not today, but 6 months ago.
Okay.
It was
The writer and director, exactly. Co-writer of 7500.
Yeah. First of all, I started with acting when I was 14.
Yeah.
I'm 19 right now. So I never really needed money. I was in school. I was with my parents. I was fine. I really did it because I loved it.
Yeah.
So I don't really think about it right now, but sometimes I think, man, I love it, but I would also love to have a family.
Right.
And you never know what will happen. So I'm also talking about this with my parents. Mm-hmm. And man, I'm from a family, my parents are doctors, engineers. And
who's a doctor and who's an engineer?
My mother is a doctor, yeah. My father is an engineer.
Uh-huh.
They're really proud of me, and I'm really proud to have the chance to go this way. But I'm really scared with my 19 years, because I know one day I want to have a family and I don't know what will happen.
Yeah. Well, the first thing I actually want to say while we have microphones in front of our faces is just that personally, my opinion is you are an extremely talented actor. You're very, very good at it. The work that we got to do together on the movie 7500, there was always so much honesty coming from you. And seeing the movie all done, audiences won't be able to see it until next year. It comes out on Amazon, but I've seen the movie all done now. And you're fantastic in it. So that's the first thing I wanted to say. You mentioned already that you started when you were 14. I actually haven't heard that whole story from you. How did it first happen?
Oh, okay. First of all, thank you. And man, it's a really, really strange story. So I always loved acting, mm-hmm. since I'm a kid, since I'm 4 or 5.
When were you, what context were you acting when you were 4 or 5?
I was in my room, uh-huh. and I saw movies.
Yeah.
And I imitated actors.
Just by yourself, talking to yourself in your room? I did that too. I still do, actually.
Yeah. But one day, I was in the 8th grade, something like this, and I was bad in school because of a girl.
Uh-huh.
So I spent a lot of time with her, and my father was a little bit disappointed, mm-hmm. and he told me, we will not make holidays. Because normally, in summer, I go to Iran to see my family, and we didn't do it this year.
Because you got some bad grades at school, you didn't go to Iran?
Yeah, exactly.
Wow. Okay.
That's my family.
Yeah, okay.
But it's nice. And my mother knew I love acting, and she saw that all my friends are gone. I was always at home, and she wanted me to do something, to go out, because I'm a active person, and she saw me in my room 24/7. So my mom checked on internet and saw a acting camp for 5 days.
Uh-huh.
And I went there, and it was nice. And I had a really, really nice teacher.
Uh-huh.
His name is Sebastian Fritz.
Yeah.
I really, really love him.
He's still in touch with him?
Yeah, yeah, of course.
Oh, that's
He's one
great.
Of my best friends.
So this camp, you were doing like theater? Was it scenes from plays, scenes from movies, improvisation? What kind of stuff? All?
90% improvisation.
Uh-huh.
And we had the chance to choose scenes that we love from movies and do it with him.
Uh-huh.
So it was awesome.
You would act it with him?
Exactly.
Not with other students?
No, we did. I think we were like 10 students. I was the only man.
Uh-huh.
He saw that I'm a little bit alone, so he worked with me.
Right.
So we had a very nice relation from the beginning. And one day he told me, man, you need an agency. You really need to continue and do this. Then, man, I was working on me, on my creativity, how to work on scripts,
yeah.
How to become better, how to become an actor.
So it was the first time that this topic had ever been broached to you. It was your acting teacher, Sebastian, saying, hey, you need to get an agent. And once he brought that up to you, then, are you saying your level of focus sort of reached a higher level and you were driven by the creativity of it, but also now driven by the prospect of, hey, maybe this is something I can pursue in a professional way?
For me, it was always strange because I had this feeling in a very, very young age.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I was 14.
Yeah.
And I really wanted to be one of the best. And I always wanted to be the best version of myself. And it was really important for me.
Yeah.
It's like strange because if you're young and you begin with acting or everything you love, you improve very, very fast. So you improve very, very fast. And
at
one
first.
Day you stop and it's like this.
Yeah.
So you're
like a
you're
plateau.
Stopped. Exactly.
Yeah.
And man, I was depressed about this 1 year ago.
1 year ago. Okay.
Yeah.
So you'd already done some jobs.
Yeah, yeah, of course.
Uh-huh.
But I was depressed on it. I was like, man, I'm not becoming better anymore.
Uh-huh.
I'm just going to set and doing my stuff, things I already know.
Uh-huh.
And I'm not becoming better. And I was like, man, I am scared about not wanting to be better.
Mm-hmm.
I need to become better. And if I don't feel this, I'm lost.
Yeah.
I'm lost in this business.
Yeah.
It was very, very difficult for me. And I would really, really love to tell this to people. That's exactly the moment you have to continue to pursue your way. I think it's one of the most important moments of your career.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not important what you do. There is a moment you don't know how to continue, how to pursue your way. And that's the moment you're becoming better.
Yeah.
But you don't realize it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a moment you need time for yourself to understand what you really want. And you have to stop and be thankful for everything you already did.
Mm-hmm.
Because human beings are not thankful for things they already have.
Yeah.
We have done so much things, everyone. Every human being has done so much incredible things, but we're not thankful for them.
Mm.
We all always want more and more and more and more and be better and better and better.
I know how that feels, yeah.
Yeah. And I think every human being who's doing art but also other things has to know that. I don't know if there's 1 year you don't know what to do, it's okay. Take your time. You need time for yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And then continue. One day you will feel that you want to improve again. And I feel it. I felt it again, I think, like 2 months ago.
Yeah.
And I'm really, really happy about this. Because I also experienced that I need other experiences. I can't already always do the same things. Mm-hmm. I'm also doing music.
Oh, you're doing some music now?
Yeah, of course. I think since 2 years. Because I realized, man, I don't know how you feel about it, but when I'm doing acting, I love doing acting, but when I do music, that's time for me.
That's how I feel about it. I've never pursued music professionally. And, you know, if I'm totally honest, I think I probably have mixed feelings about that. Sometimes I think, oh, I should have, or I should mm-hmm. now. But, you know, there's only so many hours in the day and only so many days in the week, and you have to prioritize in life. You can't necessarily just do everything. And in the end, it's not the end, but as of now, I should say, I do feel satisfied and feel like it's actually a really important thing for me that I have a creative outlet that I've been doing my whole life, music, that I feel very passionate about, and that's not tangled up in a professional career at all. That part of it just doesn't enter into the equation. I just do it because I love doing it.
That's the best form of art.
Nerds. Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Personal finance can feel like a pop quiz you didn't study for. This podcast is your study guide. On NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast, you'll hear from trusted journalists who explain the why behind major financial decisions. You'll get research-backed insights and clear pros and cons, whether you're planning a big purchase or just want to grow your wealth. Make your next financial move with confidence. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast on your favorite podcast app.
So I want to get back to something you said a second ago, that the odds are bad to make a living as an actor. Lots of people would love to be able to earn their living as an actor, and there's only room for so many people to have that kind of professional career. Obviously, anybody who wants to can be creative. But when it comes to making money being creative, that's a limited sort of space. Mm-hmm. How do you think about that when you confront that, the reality of those odds?
Man, I'm really thankful that I had the privilege to start when I was 14. Because sometimes I think if I would start today, I wouldn't do it.
Uh-huh.
I wouldn't start today, probably, because I wouldn't believe in myself. I wouldn't believe I could live a life like this that I'm living right now.
I have the same feeling.
Sometimes I can't explain why I'm feeling like this, but I believe in path.
A path, did you say?
Yeah.
You mean like destiny or something?
Exactly. I believe in my path. I believe in destiny. I believe it was destiny that I was in this camp. I'm just thinking, I feel so good right now with the things I did, with the chances I had. Why shouldn't I pursue my way? Yeah. But I know it's really dangerous. I don't want to tell guys you have to do this, because I know it's dangerous. I know I can also fail.
Right.
I don't know. It's complex. It's really really complex, but I think I would do the same art if I wouldn't make money.
Yeah.
That's what I think. And I would do acting also if I couldn't make money out of it, or I wouldn't be in this business.
Yeah.
And The main reason why I think I should stay in this business is because I can't imagine doing something else.
Yeah.
I really can't.
You mentioned a minute ago that you've spoken with your parents about this and that they feel proud, but I'm curious to hear more about that. How have they asked you about this? Have you had conversations about this? What's the dynamic in your family around this?
My parents are proud of what I'm doing because I'm doing what I love, and I'm really, really focused. And they know I wouldn't be so focused with something else.
Uh-huh.
But I think they're scared because they know this business is tough.
Yeah.
I think they want me to be safe, to have a good life, to have the chance to get a family, to feed a family.
Yeah.
So that's the reason why they want me to study something and to do something else, to have a plan B.
Right. Have you had conversations about university?
Yeah.
And so you're not going to university now?
No.
Right.
Because I told them, I'm young, I would also be a young student with 23 or 24. So right now I feel just like I have to do this and I need practice, and that's all I want right now. So I just want to shoot movies. When I don't shoot movies, work with myself, with my music, or work on my skills and improve my skills in acting. Because when you're an artist, it's not like a button you can put an on or off. You're always an actor. I sleep as an actor. I wake up as an actor. I can tell you, I work on my art for 2 hours and then I go to sleep and I do this. I go out with my friends. I always think about art, about creativity. That's why I want to do this right now. And that's all I want to do.
Yeah,
art. That's all.
You mentioned I'll still be a young student even if I go to university when I'm 23 or 24. Do you have an understanding with your parents, or is there a plan that's that specific as like, okay, so at a certain age I will go to university or anything? Or have you, at this point, are they comfortable just saying like, okay, cool, do this for now and we'll make decisions later?
Yeah. It's like this.
Yeah.
Because they know I want to have a family, so I will take this decisions by myself.
Yeah.
One day I will understand if I can continue or not, or how my chances are, if I should start studying something or not.
Yeah.
But I also talk to myself, man, I'm always thinking about art, about creativity, how can I do things better. I think it could be better for me to also study something, just find interest in other aspects in life.
Well, so speaking of, you said your dad's an engineer and your mom's a doctor. So they had a different path in life.
Man, it's crazy because my father, in my age, that's what I talked about yesterday when we watched a movie at the Locarno Festival.
Yeah.
I just thought, man, I'm 19 and I'm looking at a movie at the Locarno Festival with my parents, and my father was in war with 19.
Oh, what war?
Iran-Iraq.
Okay.
Yeah, for 2 years. And he was studying while he was there.
Uh-huh.
So I just think to myself, so wow. And I'm so thankful to my parents because I know they did all they did for me and my sister, because we can do what we want. Mm-hmm. My parents couldn't do what they want.
Mm-hmm.
What I really have from my father, what I earned from my father is to be thankful. Because my father always told me it's about the meaning. It's like my father, he'd never get a gift or a present. And one day he got a pencil from my grandmother.
Uh-huh.
And it was like the best day of his life.
Right.
So sometimes I'm really ashamed because we are not thankful enough.
Do you think that background of your parents growing up in Iran and then moving to Austria and then Germany and that past, and do you think that impacts the way that they view your choice as to what you want to do for a career?
Of course I do. But I think they want me to, they're proud of me, and I think they're also proud of themselves that I can do acting right now.
Right, right.
Understand what I mean?
Yeah, that's a great victory. That's what it, you know, they because earned that ability for you. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I'm able to do what I want because of my parents.
Yeah.
And I'm really, really thankful about it. I know I'm telling this for the first time or something, but I'm really, really thankful for me and for my sister. And I'm really thankful to sit here and talk with you about all these things that happened. I'm just thankful, man.
Yeah, it's a great way to be. So another question about the balance between creativity versus financial security. And I think we've touched on this, but I want to dive into it specifically. But part of making money as an artist is obviously the value of the money itself. But there's another part to making money as an artist that isn't about the monetary value of the money. It isn't about what you can buy with the money. It's just sort of the symbol of the money, of what it represents. There's a certain validation that comes along with making money. I don't know if that validation is healthy or unhealthy, but I know that I've felt it. Tell me about the first time you ever made money for it was for acting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
My first movie was a cinema. I think, yeah, it was a cinema project. Mm-hmm. It was my first casting. And I had
really?
To roll. Yeah.
You got the part on your first audition?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's really uncommon.
That was really nice. And I had a main role, and it was it
what?
Was yeah, it was really really nice. It was
I didn't know that, man.
Do you know The Famous Five? It's a book for children.
Uh huh.
It's very very famous in Germany also. So they did movies about them, and okay. I was in Famous Five Four. I was in the fourth.
The fourth movie, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So I was there, and I made money. Still today, I don't know how much.
Really? Wait, how old were you?
14.
You don't know how much money you made?
I have absolutely no idea. I was 14. I didn't have a bank account.
Right.
I didn't have anything. I didn't care about it. But I saw people on set who really cared about it.
Sure.
So the other actors who talked about this, that they earn more than the other actor.
Oh, people were talking about how much...
much they get. Uh-huh. And that they're better than others.
Wow.
And I was like, this world is crazy. This world is crazy. Man, we're...
These were other young actors, other kids?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
They were talking about how much money they were making.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
That's crazy because I was like, man, you're 14.
Yeah. You could also understand it being natural, though, for a 14-year-old to, like... I didn't do that either when I was that age making money. I wasn't discussing how much I was making, but mm-hmm. I could understand a 14-year-old kid who gets paid to do something wanting to brag about it. I did my share of bragging when I was younger. I started when I was like six, and I remember bragging. I don't think I bragged about the number of dollars I was making, but I did plenty of bragging until the other kids started making fun of me for bragging, and then I realized, oh, I don't want to do this anymore.
So in my experience, it's like, what's crazy for me is, man, I just realized it today, we made such a good movie. It was so human, so natural, but all these festivals, I don't feel natural there. Yeah, I don't feel well. I don't know if you understand what I mean, but
oh man, do I?
Yeah, you there? They make photos, yep. Pictures. Yep. They talk with you. It's so. It was strange for me because I don't know this. You know it much better than me, but it was just like so pervert to me that you make so natural films and have to do things that are so unnatural.
Yeah.
That's so strange for me.
I think it's a healthy reaction to all the fanfare. I you're right, it's become kind of normal to me. And I don't let it bother me anymore. I never really liked doing the whole promotional part. But I remember the first time I ever did it, because I started acting, you know, I started doing jobs and I would do little parts. And so for the first number of years of acting, I never had to do any promotion, because when you're doing like one line, two lines, one scene here and there, you're not getting interviewed. You're not doing any press. Mm-hmm. The first time I had to go and do promotion, I was 12. It was for the movie Angels in the Outfield. And I remember having the exact feeling you're talking about. And Angels in the Outfield is a very different movie than 7500. But even still, going and doing, you know, interview after interview and getting your photo taken and stuff, I know it probably sounds counterintuitive to anybody who hasn't experienced it. It probably sounds like I'm spoiled or like I'm not appreciative of the lovely good fortune that I have. And this is why I try not to feel too negatively about doing promotion, but it really is kind of objectifying and awkward, and you're really kind of turned into this weird, like, beauty pageant piece of meat. And then there's the sort of adversarial part of it, where some journalists are going to try to make you look bad, because if they can make you look bad, then that's, you know, good for them. And that's not most of them, but definitely that exists and I've experienced it. And so the whole thing is just really stressful and unrewarding. And it feels so divorced from the creative part of it that I love so much. Yeah. And the funny thing is that those images of like walking the red carpet or things like that, those are what are oftentimes, I think, aspired to. Like, this is what being an actor is all about. Like, the glorious moment of what it's all about is like getting to walk that red carpet, or like, you know, win an award and stand up on stage and hold up a trophy, or these kinds of things, which to me are so removed from the part that I've gotten a lot of joy and fulfillment from. So all that to say, I think it's a good thing that you're having that reaction to being here at the film festival. It's, I think that's healthy.
Looking for a simpler way to explore medical weight loss options? Orderly Meds connects you online with licensed healthcare providers so you can learn about GLP-1 treatment options from home. It's convenient, straightforward, and designed to fit your lifestyle. Get started today at orderlymeds.com/podcasts. That's orderlymeds.com/podcasts. Again, orderlymeds.com/podcasts. Compounded medications are not FDA approved. Results may vary. Consult a licensed healthcare provider to determine if treatment is appropriate for you. Restrictions apply.
I want to ask about your own creativity outside of your professional pursuits. Are there things that you do, creative things, that are completely not professional at all? You mentioned you were doing music, but I'm not sure if that's something that you are thinking about professionally or not, or are there other things you do that are just kind of purely for the experience of it?
Well, the music is one of the biggest parts of my creativity for my movies. I work with music all the time.
Uh-huh.
All the time. Music is one of the most important things for me in life.
Do you play instruments? Or are you composing?
Yeah, I'm playing piano.
I didn't know you play piano.
Now you do.
That's awesome, man. So when you say you make music, are you sitting and just playing piano? Are you composing stuff? Are you using MIDI? Are you sampling? What kind of music?
Sometimes
are you
I play music. I play on my piano. Yeah. I'm composing something, and I'm singing. Or
you write songs?
Yeah, of course. I'm rapping.
Okay.
I do rap.
Great.
So
in German.
In German, exactly. Mm-hmm. And a little bit French. A little bit French.
Oh really?
Yeah.
Okay. Pas mal tout ça.
Merci beaucoup. So normally I just go out and I'm writing what I feel. So music is also so relaxing for me because it's really time for me. And that's what creativity is about. Sometimes I have to play things I can't explain, but I hear a song and I feel what I have to play.
And does that feeling you're talking about, if there's something inside me, I have to get it out. Does that happen more with music than it does with acting?
No, but acting isn't about me. It's about me playing other things.
Yeah, yeah.
But music is about me. It's what I feel.
Right.
And I need to feel well to play other roles also. So I can't do acting without music, and I can't do music without acting.
Yeah.
It's strange.
That makes perfect sense. I actually think you might have articulated something that's true for me as well, that I maybe never quite understood so specifically, but you're right, because when you're acting, you're playing another character. I experience this, but when I'm making music, sometimes I make music sort of as a character, but oftentimes, yeah, it's me getting to be me. I have that envy when I see like musicians or stand-up comedians. Sometimes I have the same feeling, like, oh, they're just getting to say what they think. Because as an actor, you don't quite do that. You know, it's always indirect. You can say what you think, but you do it through a metaphor, or you do it through a narrative, or things like that. So you need to have that. It sounds like that's almost like therapeutic for you.
Of course.
Yeah.
And that's one of the best things I ever did in my life. I'm so glad that I started to write about my feelings. I didn't start with rap like this. I started with poems.
Uh-huh.
I started writing about my feelings. It was just like I was writing something and I was just like, oh wow, that's me.
Yeah.
I love the idea about writing about myself to understand myself.
Yeah.
So I started with poems, and then I continue with writing verses, and so I continue and I improved my skills, and it was also nice for me in this year where I was a little bit depressive about creativity and in my acting life. Mm-hmm. So I was creative about myself and with myself, and I write so much about myself, about my songs. I made so much songs. Mm-hmm. I have so much on my phone.
Yeah.
But now it's also funny because I can't write anymore, but I can do acting.
Right.
So there's a time for everything.
Yeah. Okay, last thing. Like I said, the questions that spawn these conversations come from folks out there on the internet. We get a lot of great questions, some of which can inspire an entire conversation like this, and some of which are just off topic and kind of weird. So I've been enjoying ending these episodes with just an off topic question.
Mm-hmm.
This actually isn't that weird, but it's off topic, but I thought it was a good question. It comes from Sandra Holloway from San Diego, California. And her question is, what's the one thing that always reminds you of your grandma? And I should say, it's actually really sweet. Lexi, the producer of this show, and she followed up with Sandra and told her that we wanted to use her question. Sandra said, oh, I'm thrilled that you like my question. I was very close to my gran, and she died this spring at 98 and 11 months. And here, look, she sent a picture of her grandma.
Oh, so sweet.
I know.
Wow.
So do one and I'll do one. What always reminds you of your grandma?
I honestly think a lot about my grandma because she came to Vienna when I was born in Vienna, mm-hmm. and my parents were studying.
Right.
So she came with my grandfather.
Yeah. Is your mom's mom or your
exactly,
dad's mom?
Exactly. My mom's mom. She's just like a mother to me also.
Mm-hmm.
So normally I think about her when I don't feel good.
Uh-huh.
I don't feel good. Normally I call my grandma.
Uh-huh.
So I always think about her. That's a really nice photo.
Yeah.
That's really, really lovely.
Yeah.
And you?
I was going to say, what always makes me think of my grandma is horseradish. You know what horseradish is?
No.
No. I don't know the word for it in German. You probably have it because, yeah, it comes from an Eastern European, like, Jewish tradition. It's like, it's the root that you grind up, sort of white. It's sort of spicy, but it's different than like spicy chili peppers or something.
Oh,
it's
okay,
like,
okay.
And you put it on beef or sausages or things like that.
Okay, okay, okay.
And it can be really powerful, especially if you make it fresh. If you buy it in a jar at the store, it's only so powerful. But when you first grind up the root, if you like take a big whiff of the horseradish, it'll like really hurt your whole, it'll clear out your sinuses, like really, it burns it up. And so my grandma, she would make fresh horseradish, and she showed my brother who made it a point. She's like, my brother wanted to learn how to make it because it's so different. You can only get that really sinus burning feeling, because this is very typical of my brother. He would, of course, at the freshest point, like take the strongest smell of it that he possibly could to give himself the most powerful, though painful, sinus clearing sensation. He called it a nosegasm, which is so he wanted to make sure that she taught us how to do it so that we didn't only have the horseradish from a jar. And he learned, and she showed both of us. Anyway, every time I eat horseradish, I always think about her.
That's nice.
Yeah. That's it, man. I really appreciate you doing this.
Thank you.
The first few weeks back at school set the tone for the entire year. But with new teachers, schedules, and expectations, it can feel like a lot. If you're looking to help your child start strong and stay confident, I've been using IXL to make that transition so much easier. IXL is an award-winning online learning platform that helps kids truly understand what they're learning. Whether they're building math confidence, strengthening reading and writing skills, or reviewing science concepts, from pre-K through 12th grade, it adapts to each child's level and pace, making it easy to spot and close learning gaps in just a few minutes a day before those gaps can snowball. Plus, it's trusted nationwide. 1 in 4 students in the U.S. are learning with IXL, and it's used in 96 of the top 100 school districts in the U.S. It's an easy, cost-effective way to get kids back into a learning routine and walking into class feeling ready and reassured. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now. Listeners can get an exclusive 20% off an IXL membership when they sign up today at IXLLearning.com/audio. Visit IXLLearning.com/audio to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price.
And that is our show. Thanks for listening. Big thanks to our guest, Omid Mimar. Thank you to the folks who asked this week's questions. Megan Culbert, you can find her on the internet at MICULBERT. And Sandra Holloway at Sauni Indigo, SauniIndigo. If you want to ask a question to inspire one of these episodes of the Creative Processing Podcast, you can email creativeprocessing@hitrecord.org. Or ask the question on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, #creativeprocessing. And if you want to do something more than ask a question, if you want to start making some art, especially making art with other people inspired by some of these topics, come to Hit Record. People are drawing. People are writing. People are writing based on drawing. People are drawing based on writing. People are making music and movies and et cetera. Everyone's being creative together. And we've got a whole project that's about just stuff that's inspired by the conversations on this podcast. You can check out hitrecord.org/creativeprocessing. The producers of the Creative Processing Podcast are Raymond Way, Lexi Tankersley. Thanks to you guys. Audio produced by Keir Schmidt. Thank you, sir. Thanks to Cadence13 and everyone at the Hit Record office. Special thanks to Box Studios in Locarno, Switzerland. Omid and I were actually in Switzerland at the Locarno Film Festival when we recorded this one. So thanks to you guys. That was a beautiful studio that we got to record in. And most importantly, thanks to you for listening. And that's it. See you next week. Thanks again.